All right, the Browns, I think today they did something, and then they've got the rest of the week off because it's the bye week, and then they'll come back and get ready for a rematch with the Ravens on Sunday the 12th. So for more on what the hell's going on in Berea, let's go to the Wake 'em Way hotline and bring in the outstanding Browns beat reporter for 92.3 The Fan and the Cleveland Browns Radio Network. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at WriterWrongFan. He's Daryl Ryder. Daryl, what is the schedule for this team? Because I know you and I were talking yesterday, trying to set you up to come on the show today, and you were waiting on the Browns schedule. What is going on with the players during this bye week?
I didn't have to work today, so that's all that matters. They I guess, had some meetings today and maybe a little bit of a workout, but that's it. They're not going to be doing anything. We'll hear from Andrew Berry tomorrow, and then we can all take a little mini vacation from what has been a disastrous and disappointing season.
All right, let's start with that season that's been so disappointing at 6-6 through the first 12. Daryl, a lot of injuries, but a lot of teams are dealing with injuries and COVID issues this year, so I'm not using that as an excuse for the Browns. What is the biggest reason, in Daryl Ryder's opinion, as to why this team has underachieved based on what the preseason expectations were?
I think it just comes down to fundamentals of execution. They just have not performed on both sides of the ball at a consistent level. And, you know, we can blame Kevin Stefanski, we can blame Joe Woods or Alex Van Pelt or whatever, but look, the players play the game, and they've not gotten it done on a consistent basis this year. And what that's a result of, certainly I think some of it has to do with injury, but to your point, right. I mean, everybody deals with it. Look at the Baltimore Ravens and all the injuries that they dealt with before training camp ended, right? They lost a bunch of guys during training camp, and I remember sitting there thinking, man, this is really there for the taking for the Browns to win this division. And lo and behold, the Ravens find themselves atop the division here as we enter the month of December. And look, that's what great organizations do. They find a way. And for as good as the Browns were a year ago, Kenny, I think that organizationally, while they might be stable, I still think they're having to find their way. You don't become a perennial Super Bowl contender overnight. It takes a long time to develop that winning culture, and clearly it's still a work in progress in Berea.
Daryl, we kept talking about complimentary football. We didn't see any of it. Defense played lights out, in my opinion, over the weekend. But the penalties, the 12 men on the field, the special teams, does this coaching staff, I mean, do they have a handle on this team?
Well, you'd like to think they do, but that was a—I mean, that was right out of the Hugh Jackson and Freddie Kitchens playbook.
You ain't lying.
That three-man, three-minute sequence at the end of the first quarter, where, and look, I get it, right? They recognized that the Ravens were about to fake a punt, so they had 12 guys on the field, had to burn a timeout. But then, how do you not recognize that Lamar Jackson came back out on the field to go for it on fourth down, and then once again have 12 guys on the field? That's on Mike Prefer. That's on Kevin Stefanski. That is a lack of attention to detail from the coaching staff, and quite frankly, inexcusable. And then I think it was the field goal attempt. They had to run an 11th guy. It was either the field goal or the ensuing kickoff. They had to run an 11th guy on the field because, again, they couldn't count. And that, once again, goes to a lack of detail and focus from the coaches, as well as the players. I mean, look, the players should know their assignments and what they're supposed to do at all times, so they're not blameless in it, but just it was a terrible 3.5-minute sequence and a very, very poor reflection on Kevin Stefanski as well as his coaching staff.
All right, let's stay with Stefanski and add in a Baker Mayfield to this conversation, Daryl. My partner here has been saying for weeks now that it's not Stefanski's final say as to whether Baker Mayfield plays or he can sit him, that there are other people.
No, I'm asking.
You said you thought.
I would not be surprised if it's not coming from a higher power, but if it's not, then it is on the coach.
Okay, so what are you hearing? Does Kevin Stefanski have final say on who the quarterback is, or is that coming from Andrew Berry or even the Haslam?
No, that's Kevin Stefanski's job. To look, if Baker Mayfield in Stefanski's mind is not able to perform, then he's not going to play.
Then why is he still playing? Because he's not performing, Daron. You put the stats out, 2-5. I saw your stats you threw out there. So why is he still playing?
That's why I asked the question that I asked yesterday, Kenny. And now, you know, what do you do to get Baker Mayfield performing at the level that he needs to perform to help this team win? Because he's 2-5 in his last 7 starts. In his last 5 starts, he's completing less than 57% of his passes. The touchdown to interception ratio is hot garbage. The sacks are hot garbage. The offense is hot garbage. So that, you know, I've said it on my station. I think Cleveland Browns have failed Baker Mayfield this year. I really do. They should have sat him for multiple weeks following the Arizona game. Case Keenum was quite capable of going out there rolling out a 15-10 loss to the god-awful Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay?
Right.
Steelers, sorry, I know you're a fan. Terrible football team.
Awful.
Not a contender, and the Browns could only put 10 points up against that team. And that's what I said the whole game. They can't beat that. They can't beat that. And apparently not. They
right.
can't. And they're scoring 10, 13, 17 points per game as well. If you take the Cincinnati game out, which you'd say, well, Daryl, that's not fair because it's, you know, they did score 40-plus against the Bengals. But you take that out, Kenny, they're averaging less than 14 points a game
yeah.
in their last 7 games with Baker Mayfield as the starter. So I don't know why he's playing. I have asked as politely as I can. I have voiced my view on the situation, both on Twitter as well as in what I've written. I think that the Cleveland Browns failed Baker Mayfield this year by not sitting him down multiple weeks. Because now get what I said. I hate to play the I told you so card, but I'm going to when it comes to the Browns. I said after he suffered the dislocated shoulder against the Cardinals, this thing is going to linger for the rest of the year, might get worse, and Baker Mayfield's not going to play well. Well, he scored 10 points against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Again, they've had the big game in Cincinnati. That also is the same game, by the way, that Baker Mayfield hurt his foot or his heel or whatever. they scored 7 against the New England Patriots and got drilled. Only scored 13 against the hapless Detroit Lions, and they put up 10 points in a loss to the Baltimore Ravens. So I hate to say I was right, but I was right. Playing Baker Mayfield through this was a terrible decision made by the organization because what you've done now is you've generated all this criticism at Baker because, I came out. If this is the best Baker's felt in weeks, then he absolutely should sit the rest of the season because he did not play well. I know the numbers were a lot better than they've been in weeks past against the Ravens, but he still did not play well Sunday night in Baltimore.
And yet, when you look at this team, every week my opening comments are, when I make my notes watching the game, is opening drive looks good, Baker looks sharp, and those plays are usually scripted from the head coach. After that first series or 15 plays or whatever it is, it seems like it all falls apart.
Yep.
Now, so if you consider that, one of two things happen. Either he's getting shot up before the game and it wears off, or the play calling is less than stellar. And if that's the case, shouldn't they consider, have they spoken about maybe Van Pelt or someone else calling the offensive plays?
You know, you're asking for very reasonable things here, and the Browns aren't interested. I'm just being honest with you.
Wow.
They ain't changing the quarterback, and they ain't changing who's calling plays. Next.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's Stefanski. He's stubborn.
I mean, why
man.
Is it? You've seen it, Kenny. This goes back to other regimes as well. I remember vividly Tennessee came to town. We got ran off the field. But the opening drive, it was like, oh, my God, the Browns are back. Well, no, they're not.
Hey, you know what? Look, they occasionally can count to 11, and they occasionally can follow a script. What else do you want from them at this point?
Daryl Ryder, Browns beat reporter, joining us via the Wake 'Em Way hotline, talking Browns football. They're on the bye week. They're at 6-6, technically in last place in the AFC North. And Daryl, what about the defense? Let's, I guess, find the positive, right? While the offense sucks right now, the defense kept them in that game the other night, created 4 turnovers. The offense was only able to score 3 points off those 4 turnovers. But that is progress, I guess, from the defensive side. Is the defense fixed and the offense just needs to catch up now with the defense?
Well, they've played 8 games this year, Kenny, where the defense has allowed less than 20 points. Okay? I don't think the defense is nearly as bad as we're making it out to be perfectly honest with you. The reason why the defense at times gets exposed is because the offense is in the tank. Yes, I know that Kansas City put 33 up on them in week 1. That's Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. You expect that, right? The Cardinals, leading the NFC right now, they put 37 on them. Patriots, I would argue, might be the best team in the AFC, if not the NFL, right now with the way they are currently playing with that rookie quarterback. So they've had 3 really bad days. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking real, real bad days.
Right.
And out of the 12. And if you want to include the Chargers. They gave up 42, especially those 2 big times. So 4 of the 12 games they have played, they've had bad days at the office. I'll take that ratio anytime.
Okay.
To me, it's the offense that's letting them down. So I think that, you know, and here's the shame of it, right? You got Lamar Jackson to throw 4 interceptions. He ain't coming to Cleveland on December 12th and throwing 4 more picks. You got your Christmas gift and you blew it. That's on the Browns. That was their chance, and they blew it. So, the defense under Joe Woods, while, yes, statistically in some areas, situationally, especially, again, on the 3rd down and 4th down, they have had their struggles. I think overall, when you take the emotion out of it and you take a step back and you just look at the situation objectively, you say, you know what? They're not elite. They're not great, but they're not bad. Like, the defense is good enough to get you where you want to go. It's the offense that's holding this team back. So I think Joe Woods, for all the fire Joe Woods stuff we heard early in the season from fans, I think he's done a pretty good job.
Well, they should be for what they spent. And it brings me to my next question about Jadeveon Clowney. I think that was the best game that he's played. I don't care what the stat sheet looked like, but against the Ravens, this dude had a high energy. So did Myles Garrett.
Like, he spent the whole game chasing around Lamar Jackson, right? And he got nothing to show for it other than a tipped football.
Well, does he have this to show for it on a 1-year contract? Do they contemplate now, or is it too early, bringing him back next season?
No, I don't think it's too early, but I think that I would certainly entertain bringing him back next year. I like what he's done this year. Certainly the injury history, the fragility is still there. It's a concern. We've seen that this season, but when he's out there, I think he's played well. And, you know, we get caught up in what's in the box scores and the stats and whatever, but if you just watch the way he plays, you can impact the game without putting numbers in the box score. And I think that you've gotten that from Jadeveon Clowney. So I would not object if Andrew Berry wanted to bring him back on another 1-year deal. The thing of it is, though, from Clowney's perspective, he's probably sitting there saying, hey, I've shown everyone I can still play at a high level.
Gotcha.
Now I want to get a multi-year deal. I just don't know if I want to go that far with him. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But that's something that needs to take place here in the offseason, and, well, we got at least 5 more games left on the string.
Darrell Ryder, our guest via the Wake 'em Way Hotline, talking Browns football. Darrell, along the lines of Myles Garrett, tied Reggie Camp with 14 sacks, which technically is the franchise record for most sacks in a single season, although there's somebody else, I forget, Bill Glass or something, I don't know.
Yeah, in the 1970s, if you go back and, you know, the historians have gone back and looked at film, and they've tried to include those numbers, but from the NFL's perspective and from the Browns' perspective, Camp is, and that's why in the story that I wrote, I put the official holder of the previous record,
right.
Reggie Camp, because I don't want to take anything away from Glass or any of the other players that the Browns had before that era, but the NFL didn't start recognizing sacks as an official statistic or metric until I believe it was 1982 was the first year. So he did it in 1984. I think there's a chance Myles certainly can approach 20. He has told us his goal is to get above 20 in a season, but he's had an outstanding year.
all right, along those lines. He was taking some flack after the Baltimore Ravens game because he was being chummy with the arch rival. Now, times have changed. Back when I was growing up, you'd never see that when the Steelers played the Browns and vice versa, right? But all these guys know each other now. How did you take that, where he's chasing Lamar Jackson around all over the place? Jackson makes that touchdown throw to Andrews, and Miles goes over and pats him and says, heck of a play.
I would have done the same thing, but I would not have said heck of a play. And for the purposes of your FCC license, I would not tell you what I would tell Lamar Jackson while shaking his hands. But, yeah, I have no issue with it. I think that sportsmanship is something that it has gotten lost in sport these days, and I think that that's a terrific example to show the young players that look up to him. And certainly I would rather that than what happened a couple of years ago,
swinging a helmet at your opponent. Okay, yeah, maybe that helped loosen him up a little bit,
and I'm also going to say this, Kenny, it also validates that Mason Rudolph said something pretty terrible.
Okay.
Miles is showing you the type of guy he really is.
Okay.
That's all. I think that's some pretty good evidence that Miles isn't a bad guy. Something terrible had to happen to trigger him. I don't want to get in that conversation again. But no, I don't have any problem with that. I get fans are fans, and I grew up in the I was born in the late 70s. I grew up in the 80s and the early 90s, so I remember Brown Steelers and the bitterness. And I was surprised the Ravens didn't try and score a touchdown late, because that's what a real rival does. I mean,
right,
that's what Michigan probably should have done to Ohio State at Ann Arbor late, right? That's what you do as a rival. You rub their nose in it no matter what until the final, whistle blows. But I think that was a very positive thing for the youth, young kids that watch the game, that play the game, to see Miles. And the funny thing is, though, right, if you watch the replay, you had two different reactions. You had Miles showing Lamar respect on the left side of the video, and then on the right side, you saw Jadeveon Clowney take his helmet off and spike it. So, in frustration. So, it was an incredible play by Lamar Jackson. It really, really was. And one of those quarterback envy moments where you sit there and say, yeah, I'm never going to see Baker Mayfield ever make a play like that.
Daryl, great stuff as always. Thanks for the time. Have a good off week. All right, buddy?
You got it, guys.
Daryl Ryder checking in via the Wake 'Em Way hotline here on the Kenny and JT Show.